Hello, and welcome to Ask an Atheist with Sam Mulvey. I am Becky Friedman. Sam is off today, and with me in the studio is Bridget and Sean. How are you guys?
I'm good. How are you?
Doing good.
Yeah. It's really nice to be back with the three of us, I think, in this studio again. We had an episode last month that was kind of fun, and I think that we're up for some more fun today. It's, you know, mid to late March right now, and in mid to late April, in about a month, a lot of us are going to be doing some marching, aren't we?
Yes, I'm so excited for the March for Science. It's such a wonderful, like, way to bring all of the different communities together that are supporters of science from around the world and really show that, you know, science isn't something to be scared of.
So,
you know?
So April 22nd, Earth Day. Yeah,
Earth
I think
Day.
That there's over 400 satellite marches all around the world at this point, but really the sort of seed march is going to be in Washington, D.C.
Yes.
But there's going to be several here in Western Washington, at the very least, and I think now we're up to six or seven throughout Washington State. Mm-hmm. So right here in Tacoma, going to be a nice little teeny one down in Tollefson Plaza in Tacoma. Of course, in Seattle, I think that's where a lot of us are going to be.
Yes.
Down in Olympia, on our capital, there's going to be different marches there and different speakers in all sorts of places.
Yeah, and I'm trying to decide, do I want to go to the smaller march that I can just walk to from my house, or do I want to go and make a big show, you know, go for the big showing at the bigger city nearby? And I wonder if some of our listeners are trying to decide between those two things as well. What would you think?
I am definitely going to the big one in Seattle. One, it's closer to where I'm currently living. And also, I think having the large group facing is really a good way to show the world that it's like, we are united in this. And I also, I think my favorite thing about it is like, I'm on the forum talking about this event, and everybody's so concerned about making sure we don't leave an ecological impact. Like, no litter on the ground. We don't want to leave anything left behind. And I can't say for certain other that other cities are having those same considerations, but Seattle definitely is. And so that I'm really excited about that aspect.
Yeah, I'm really glad to hear that, because I was checking out Wall Street Journal's Red Feed, Blue Feed, which is that page if you want to look at a liberal feed and a conservative feed side by side. And after every protest, you see all these pictures of the litter from these protests. So it would be nice if there isn't even that opportunity for someone to do that typical after protest litter story that you always see.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, I know Miles Greb, who is he was on the show a few weeks ago. He's the organizer for the March for Science in Seattle. And that was one of the things that frustrated him so much about, like, the Women's March and a lot of the other protests that have happened, is like, you go in afterwards and it's just filthy, and he wants to make sure that doesn't happen. And I agree with that as well.
I think that's huge, and that's great. The other thing I'm sort of thinking about in this is framing for my own self as either a protest or a rally. You know, you can rally for science, and at the same time you can protest and the abominable, in my opinion, cuts at the federal level that are being proposed to things like our EPA, which would have a huge impact directly for us in Puget Sound, for funding for NIH, for, you know, National Institutes of Health, for straight research, as if these programs do nothing. At the very least, they keep these folks employed.
Right.
And at the most, they're sort of the basis for our scientific and technical innovation and breakthroughs.
Right.
Yeah, and not to mention, you know, I would want to protest Trump's attempts to muzzle the climate change research. And I remember one of his spokespeople saying that they want to make sure the EPA is putting out information that's in line with their beliefs. And that's totally not how science should work. We should just do science and be open to it being different than what we'd like it to be.
Right. Science is not a partisan issue. Like, our planet should not be considered a partisan thing. And why it's become that is devastating. And that's one of the, I think one of the key things about this March for Science is that people are coming together from all different political views and all different socioeconomic statuses and coming together and saying science is important, and especially in the health of our planet. So that's important.
Now, you and Dan are coming at it very much from environmentalism angles, just knowing you personally, knowing how you guys are on our show. But we see also, especially in the Seattle T-shirt designs for sort of the emblems for what science represents, this huge diversity in terms of areas of investigation. So have you guys seen the T-shirts that are available?
I'm really excited about them.
So you had a little story about sort of collecting the different emblems, and we've got the environmental ones with orcas.
Orcas.
Right?
There's the ones with like the beakers and the different chemistry things. There's the atom. There's, you know,
I think there's a volcano for geology.
Yeah.
That's something important to Washington State. For certain.
Very important. I think there's quite a large volcano looming not far from here, in fact. but it is, they worked really hard to show all of the different aspects of science that are being represented. And I think they've done a really good job. But yeah, definitely the orca emblem is my absolute favorite. And the back of the T-shirts is really cool, too, because it has the atom, the Bohr's model atom type thing.
And this is a design that is being used for different satellite marches in different cities and things like that.
This one in particular is just Seattle, because in the middle of the atom is our Space Needle in Seattle. And that makes it like really close to home. And I think every city has their own emblem in some form, but it's like, oh, this one makes me happy.
I've seen some really cool ones, like the St. Louis one has the arch. Part of the sort of electron trail of the atoms going around and things like that. So it's definitely cool how each city is having their own take on it.
Yeah, I love it.
And I want to applaud also within the March for Science in locally and in the national conversation, really being receptive to people's needs to draw attention to, hey, we need to also diversify science in terms of race, in terms of socioeconomic access, and in terms of gender. And we can have lots of conversations about whether science is closed off or scientists are closed off to people of varying, backgrounds. But I'm happy to see that most organizers in most of our cities are really receptive to that, and is receptive to criticism of saying, oh, this is an area that we didn't know. And so, yes, we want to highlight speakers from advancing Chicanos and Native Americans in science. And yes, we want to highlight someone from the Society of Women Engineers. So I think that it's really cool to see being open to that criticism and being open to saying, this is something I didn't know, in the same way that we look at that with science.
Absolutely.
The same way, oh, this is a new discovery. Oh, new information has altered the model of how I think of the world.
Yeah.
And that can happen with social movements, and it can happen with information about our natural world.
Absolutely. Yeah, and in the forum that I'm on, it started to go pretty anti-conservative, like certain threads, and the moderators did come on and say, hey guys, this is not a partisan issue. We do have Republicans here. We do have conservatives here. This is not just a liberal thing. And I thought that they handled it really well. And it's quite inspiring. And I hope that other groups follow that.
Yeah, it makes me really glad to hear that, because you wouldn't want to see science in general become so partisan split in the way that climate change has, you know, and in specific areas of science. And then on the other side of that, you have just in general, most of the pro GMO science groups. I don't know why it turned out this way. It just turns out most of them are conservative, like in terms of politics. At least that's the impression I get. So I think what I'd want to say is everyone can be involved with advocating for science. Science is a way for us to understand the world better, which helps all of us, no matter what our political values are. We need to know how reality is, and science gets at that in a very direct way.
I think it's a really great point. This is something that's awesome that's going on both locally and nationally. I want to draw our attention, though, something of note specifically to people that are like us, interested in issues of, you know, religious equality, freedom to not believe, freedom to believe. And that brings us close to home as well. And it's not a super great thing. And it's that Western Washington has experienced two high profile hate crimes recently. First one is that a Sikh man from Kent, Washington, is recovering after being shot in the arm by a man who yelled, "Go back to your country," as the victim worked on his car in his driveway. In a separate incident, Temple Dehersh Sinai was vandalized with graffiti that declared, "The Holocaust is fake history." Governor Jay Inslee released a statement condemning both acts, saying, "We are seeing an increase in reports of harassment, vandalism, and attacks against Muslims, Sikhs, Hispanics and Latinos, African Americans, LGBTQ individuals, and other minority groups. It is the responsibility of each and every one of us to condemn any and all acts of hate and intolerance." U.S. Senator Maria Cantwell held a roundtable meeting of faith leaders last week where they called for increased awareness, education, and interagency interfaith collaboration. And a bipartisan group of senators and congressional representatives have asked the FBI for help in the wake of these and other acts, including seemingly coordinated threats on Jewish schools and community centers nationwide. Have you guys heard about these particular incidents that have been happening?
Yes, I have. And it's so hard because we live like in the Seattle area, in Western Washington, we live in sort of a liberal bubble. And when we have events like this in such a coordinated effort, when they're so close together, it's devastating because my home is supposed to be safe, you know? And even though I am probably safe because of the color of my skin, I want everybody in my home to be safe. And this is my home, and it's devastating. I love that my representatives are taking action on it and speaking out against it. But at the same time, like, where are these people coming from? They don't belong in this. Like these people who are acting on these hate crimes, they don't belong in my safe little liberal bubble. And it's frustrating.
Yeah, I remember when I saw the picture of the graffiti that said the Holocaust is fake history, and they put dollar signs on all the S's. And the first thing I thought of was, what rabbit trail on the internet did this person get sucked into, or what event or what person, you know, pulled this person into this like conspiracy theory mindset? And how would you prevent more people from getting sucked into that? Because I want to see less of this. I got in touch with the group called Life After Hate, which is a nonprofit that does a number of things, one of which is they help people who are trying to leave these hate groups. And they do a lot of education on that. And
now, is this a U.S.-based group? Or
yes.
Worldwide?
I'm not sure, but I'm pretty sure they're U.S. based. And they, you know, I asked them what they needed to help. I sent them an email saying, if you could have anything, what would it be to help address this? Because I kind of got tired of feeling helpless, you know, seeing this uptick. And they told me they needed three things. One was exposure. So that's why I'm talking about them right now. And then the second thing was they want opportunities for their group to give presentations, large and small, to different groups, community groups, churches, any group. 'Cause a lot of the people in their group used to be part of these supremacist movements, and they found their way out of them. And one of the big things is the need for community, and as they try to get out. And then the third thing that they need, of course, is money, like all nonprofits. So I just wanted to share that, kind of boost their signal for anybody who wants, you know, to do something. You can get in touch with them at lifeafterhate.org.
It's pretty cool. And what you said about needing community, you can imagine that someone who has been associated with something so extreme might have things like tattoos or identifying, you know, marks on them that would make it really difficult to reintegrate into a society that rejects that kind of outlook. I've heard of really fantastic tattoo artists that say, if you have, you know, a prison tattoo, a gang tattoo, or a white supremacist tattoo, and you wish to you have changed your philosophy and you wish to no longer have that mark on your body, we will do cover-ups for free.
Yep. Mm. Yeah, that's actually a big push in the tattoo community to have more people that are willing to do that as artists. I know the tattoo artist I go through does the same sort of thing. He's like, you want a cover-up of something that you no longer believe in that's, you know, could potentially be harmful to you or others. Let's get rid of it. Let's take care of it. And I don't think he can do it for free at this point, but at a discount, which is pretty great. And there's a big push for that in the community.
And yeah. for changing whatever your ink is on your body, I mean, there's so many possibilities for what kinds of things you could change something into. And I've just seen scrolling through different articles online, you know, blooming flowers or birds mm-hmm. that are free and flying. What kinds of things have you seen?
Particularly with swastikas, they turn really well into like stained glass windows type things. There's any number of things. I mean, I have a cover up of not a hate, you know, a hate group tattoo, but one that I no longer fit with my theme, and it was really easy to cover up, and it's still sort of visible. Like, he incorporated parts of it into the cover up, so it's still there, it's still a part of my narrative, but it's no longer that original tattoo. And there's so many different ways to cover up some ink, so it's definitely well worth it, especially if it's something inflammatory. Like, it's not that difficult to cover up.
Back to the graffiti at Temple de Hirsch Sinai, with, as you said, Sean, the S's in Holocaust is Fake History were as dollar signs. That image contrasted with actually a billboard that's recently been put up in Phoenix
yes.
as an art installation is really kind of striking, because I don't know if you guys have seen, you're nodding your heads about this billboard in Phoenix. It has Donald Trump in the middle, and it has what look like at first glance swastikas, but they're actually sort of these turned, you know, bastardized dollar signs. And there's some, you know, nuclear mushroom clouds in the middle and all kinds uh-huh. of things like that. And this is in a specific place in Phoenix that is sort of where a lot of the art galleries are. And mm-hmm. it's a very vibrant art community that's down there in that area of Grand Avenue. And to contrast sort of this you know, Nazi dollar sign with Holocaust is Fake History, the Jews are all about, you know, money dollar signs, was striking to me. I don't want to quite be Alanis Morissette and say it's ironic, because I don't think that's actual irony.
No.
But
well, neither was the song, so
I can say it on pretty good authority that my grandparents, who received reparations from the German government until the day they died, did not fake the demise of their entire extended family, nor their disruption from their homes and their interrupted schooling as a money-making scheme.
Right. like where does that thought even come from? How does that even manifest itself? Like, you have to be so delusional to think that people would fake something, fake, quote-unquote, something like that. Like, I just...
So I think that it's important to keep up on it. And, you know, I've seen in terms of the nationwide effort to look at and try and pinpoint the cause or the source of these coordinated threats against, like, the JCCs, the community centers, and the Jewish day schools, you know, depending on you know, what angle of that investigation you're looking at, FBI has been involved, and, you know, they found one suspect that seemed to have been a one-off thing who had a grudge against a girlfriend or something like that. But at the same time, you have Donald Trump saying, you know, in this very suggestive and offensive language, that perhaps the Jewish people are, you know, faking their own bomb threats,
right?
You know, in order to make other people look bad.
Not a good legacy to continue. I don't think Trump is necessarily aware of the, like, historical significance of continuing.
No, he's fully aware. He just doesn't care. Like,
I might go with Sean on this one. I think that he might be clueless. I think that he has about a seventh grade reading level. Probably was, you know, throwing spitballs in his U.S. government class or his world history class, and hasn't really looked at this or cared to look at anything that didn't apply to his narrative. for the longest time.
I remember in a press conference, I think it was like a month and a half ago or so, someone gave him a pretty softball question. It was a man from a Jewish newspaper, and he threw out this. He started by complimenting him and saying, "Look, we've been kind to you. I know people criticize you," and then he says, "What is your response to the uptick in threats to the Jewish community?" And then Trump got offended because that question was too complex for him. Like, he was afraid he was going to stumble on a mine and stumble his words or something, I guess. Like, he's like, that's a complex question. Sit down. You said it was going to be a simple question. And I'm like, whoa. Like, I don't know. I think it might just be, a lot of this might be going over his head. Now, he's got people on his team that it doesn't go over his head on. We can agree on that.
So it's a willful ignorance thing. It's not that he's unaware. He's just willfully, or I mean, he is unaware, but it's by choice.
He at least knows it's beyond his expertise and doesn't seem interested in changing that about himself. I'll say that.
Unlike the science, unlike the, this new information might change my worldview and change my scientific theory, change my model of how I understand the world. We could only hope. This is Ask an Atheist. To give us a call at 844-SKEPTIC. We'll be back after the break with some more local things and perhaps a little bit more science, perhaps some things a little bit more far-reaching.
Hasn't God We Trust invaded your town? Are you tired of government officials who want to plaster "In God We Trust" on taxpayer-owned property? Are you afraid because your local sheriff placed an "In God We Trust" decal on the patrol cars? We are here to help. The original motto project is for those who feel the separation of church and state is an important issue and should be honored regardless of your belief or lack thereof. Theists, non-theists, and all free thinkers are welcome. We need your support to show politicians that diversity exists within our nation, and their promotion of a monotheistic religion and push for theocracy will not be tolerated. Stand up and be heard. Join us at originalmotto.us.
Need a break from the theistic world?
Live in the Seattle area?
Like the Flying Spaghetti Monster?
Whether you're an ardent non-believer, steadfast agnostic, or marauding Pastafarian, check out the award-winning nonprofit organization Seattle Atheists.
Socialize at the Third Thursday Meetup, attend lectures, come camping, donate blood.
Connect at seattleatheists.org.
Seattle Atheists, we believe in you.
Billy, I am a Nigerian prince, and I want to hide $1 billion in your locker.
Wow, $1 billion?
All I need is your lunch money.
What a great deal. Here you go.
Wait, Billy. Just because you want to believe something doesn't mean you should. Come to Camp Quest Northwest, where you'll learn critical thinking and science in a fun-filled, week-long nature camp.
No!
Camp Quest Northwest can be found at campquestnorthwest.org. Donations and volunteers accepted. The devil is not real.
Welcome back to Ask an Atheist with Sam Mulvey. I'm still Becky, and still with me is Bridget.
Hi.
And still with me is Sean.
Hi.
So, from local to a little bit less local, but still within Washington State, we have something out of the Tri-Cities area. This is in Kennewick, in particular, Kennewick, Washington. School officials in Kennewick are being urged to reconsider hosting an abstinence-only speaker as part of the instruction being offered to seniors to make up for weather-related school cancellations. In order to keep their original graduation date, seniors will need to attend school for 3 Saturdays of their choosing. Among their options is Puyallup-based Brad Henning, who gives relationship and sexual abstinence presentations. A letter from the Domestic Violence Services of Benton and Franklin Counties criticizes his presentations for omitting what to do in dangerous relationship situations, while also saying he reinforces gender expectations and stereotypes. The Calvary Chapel in Tri-Cities encouraged all Christians to send an email supporting Brad Henning's presentation, saying that liberal opposition is based on Henning's abstinence-only focus and his omission of the LGBTQ agenda. Sean, you have a personal connection to this particular dude, right? You've encountered his teachings in a past life of yours, haven't you?
Yes. Yeah. Well, when I was in junior high, it was the entire ninth grade, because where I went, junior high was ninth grade. Mm-hmm. Anyway, yeah, it was the entire school was there, and he was presenting on sex and relationships and the difference between men and women. And the main thing I remember taking away from that was fear about sex and fear about what that could do to my ability to have a relationship with a woman, for example. So, for example, he talks about this experiment that social scientists did with men, where they had men took turns one by one going into a room, and then they go out of the room and they're supposed to draw and describe what they saw. But what they changed every time is how much clothing a woman was wearing in the corner. And so over time, they noticed that the less clothing the woman was wearing, the less about the room they remembered and more about the room. Or sorry, the less about the room and the more about the woman they noticed. And what Brad Henning did, though, is he took that and he said that the room represents your relationship and the naked woman represents sex. So what he was saying is if you have sex too early, it'll impact your ability to get to know the girl you're dating. And there's some other...
Seems like an awkward way to create conclusions from social science research and data.
Right.
Yes, there was a logical jump there.
I mean...
logical jump or an illogical jump?
I mean, yeah, okay. Well, the jump, whatever it is. Yeah. A leap, if you will.
Because, I mean, if I were to look at that sort of study, I would be like, well, were they... What age group were the men? Were certain men who weren't noticing the naked woman, like, were they virgins? Had they had sexual experiences? Were they, you know, seasoned pros? I mean, what, like, there's so many questions, so many variables to a study like that, to automatically take that and assume that sex detracts from anything. It's like... That's a big logical jump. But
well, also, if you say, I want to concentrate on my relationship, then that's one thing. If you're told, go into a room, come out and draw something, you weren't told beforehand to go and concentrate on really getting to know your room, right?
Right.
Like,
right.
And who cares? It's so inconsequential. But for many people, investment in a relationship, in a partnership, is very consequential, and people are going to put good thought into that. They're also probably, especially if they're, you know, ninth grade teenagers, going to put a lot of thought into sex, because that's a natural that's thing to do when right. You're in ninth grade.
And that's the thing about these religious organizations that are preaching the abstinence only and all of that stuff, is that they're saying to these impressionable youth, they're saying, you are wrong because of the way you are. And that is that is so devastating. I remember as a young girl seeing presentations like that. It wasn't through the school, but through like the church youth group and stuff like that, and thinking, oh man, like I can't have these thoughts. And it was like denying the most basic part of life. And it's and the pressure that it puts on women, especially. It's like, this is your fault that these men are having impure thoughts. This is your fault that, you know, Adam ate from the apple or whatever. And it's just like, how devastating to do this to our young women.
So something that I should clarify is that on Brad Henning's Life Resources webpage, he actually does not purport to have any links to a particular religion. He doesn't use things in his language saying like promote God-fearing abstinence and, you know, something like that. But he's very popular at sort of the promise parties and youth group, you know, for youth group speaker and whatnot. And his message is very much aligned with many of the evangelical abstinence-only religious orientations for looking at teen sex in general.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the things that is really insidious that I think that some people are looking at in terms of the criticism with these stereotypes and these damaging messages to girls is either the shoe or the chewing gum or the toothbrush metaphor.
Right.
Now, I grew up in a rather, I guess you could say, sex-positive environment, even within my religious community, where, you know, they talked about, in my Hebrew school, we looked at, okay, well, what is the Bible and the Talmud say about sex? And they basically presented, you know, premarital sex as something that was a personal choice and something very specific to you and your morals and you know, whatever your family values were and things like that. So I didn't have any of these things. I wasn't exposed to this chewing gum thing and the toothbrushes. But Sean, you were fairly religious as a teen or observant as a teen, yeah, or as a college student. And what was this like? What was this all about?
Well, as far as his presentation goes, I don't think he talked about the chewing gum or the shoes, but he does have a story, might actually be worse in some ways. Do you want me to kind of tell you about it?
Yeah, sure. Go ahead.
So this is, I'm referring to his website, bradhenning.com/girlsonly.html. Question 38, why do people think it's okay for a guy to have sex, but not for a girl? The first paragraph, he kind of goes into the idea that if a woman gets a reputation as a wild woman, she can't go back. And then in the second paragraph, he says, think about the fairy tales. There's the young prince, handsome, rugged, self-sufficient, the man who can stand up to the challenge. He's the hero, the man on the white horse, and he's looking for his fair maiden. And then just to skip down to the end, he's been dreaming about a fair maiden, not the town slut, so he leaves town to continue his search. And then he says, is this right for him to be having sex before marriage or not her? No, but the answer is not for her to choose to become sexually active for the sake of equal rights. So I hope that made sense.
Don't try and promote your equal rights. Don't lose your virginity and sleep with a bunch of people just because you want equal rights. What a thing to say. What an outrageous thing to say. Swallow your desire for equal rights, ladies, at the risk of being judged a slut and missing your hero. First of all, that's hugely damaging to men also.
Right? I was just going to say the same thing.
It's like, you have to be the hero?
You have to be the one to rescue the damsel in distress sort of thing. Like, well, what if you don't? Like, how damaging is that if you don't even encounter said damsel in distress?
Yeah.
How do you become a man that way? Like, how do you fulfill that? Oh, I get so angry.
Here's the other thing. Within Washington State, our state law says that if a school district offers sexual health education, it must be comprehensive and scientifically and medically accurate.
Yes.
And in order to be comprehensive, you have to incorporate sexual health advice and education for all sorts of teens. And that includes gay kids. That includes kids who aren't sexual at all, who are asexual, that don't feel the need to either preserve their virginity, whatever that particularly means,
right,
or remain abstinent until marriage. When you're sending a message that, you know, you remain abstinent until marriage, that's also sending the message that you have to get married and have sex.
Right.
Right. When you have things that are comprehensive, you need to explain, you know, the biology behind it, not just you should be scared because everyone who has sex as a teen is devastated and has high suicide rates and gets STDs. Right.
Right.
Like, there's things that are contrary to that, especially with comprehensive, medically and scientifically accurate education. And for the Kennewick schools to say, hey, this can be part of your legit instruction to satisfy your other state requirement for seat time in an instructional environment before you graduate, I think is, one, bad instructional practice. Two, borders on breaking our state law regarding our sexual health and sexuality education.
Absolutely.
I think to your point that it needs to be comprehensive. The way my junior high handled it is they had his presentation, but they also had other curriculum about preventing pregnancy, how to have sex but not get pregnant. And they were, I guess the counterpoint that someone might say is he's just an additional thing that, especially in this case, people don't even have to go to. But where I think it gets Dangerous is one of the ideas that he's put out on YouTube. And we could include the link in the show notes if you like. Someone asks, why are men jerks? And part of his answer is that women allow men to be jerks. And what women should do is they should all unite and not put up with crap from men and never date jerks so that men are forced to be not jerks.
Hold on. Wait. So we shouldn't have sex just in a misguided attempt to establish equal rights. But we shouldn't put up from baloney that boys give us because they're jerks. So we should unite and demand equal rights to be treated nicely so they won't be. I don't even know where this guy is going.
No. And that's the thing about these presenters is like they go into this sort of circular thought process where everything leads back to sex is bad. And they can't, like, detract from that. And get a lot of contradictions in that.
Yeah, his entire take on it is he basically goes through 9 reasons to wait until marriage to have sex. So everything's going to fit in that narrative. And it's good to encourage girls to not put up with crap from men, definitely. But the bad is sowing this seed of an idea that girls are to blame for guys being jerks. I think that can grow into a really dangerous idea later on. I don't think he's aware of it, but someone should point it out to him. That's why the domestic violence places are sending a letter is because of that type of dynamic.
You're exactly. Giving him way too much credit here, Sean. You think, oh, he's just simply unaware of it.
Like, no, I
think this guy has a higher reading level than Donald Trump. Okay. I think that everything that he's doing is targeted. It's insidious. It's to promote an agenda of elevating this concept of virginity, whatever this means. I mean, he has sort of this, a part of other presentations that he does is to have sexually active teens reestablish their virginity by taking their like re-virginization pledges. And all of that concept is based on heterosexual penetrative sexual contact, which we know that when you're doing a sexual health presentation for teens, there's so much more than that. And there's so much more things beyond that for
he anyone. Does include that type of stuff. To be fair, nothing LGBT related, but he does include touching and kissing and oral sex, etc. All the loopholes people try to get into, because his whole take is more like an emotional based. It's not about the magic of penis plus vagina. You know, it's like his whole stance is basically that sex will take away from your relationships later on. He even has a story about a friend of his who had sex with over 200 women over his life, and how sad he is that he did that, because now when he has sex with his wife, he can't stop thinking about everyone else. And I was wondering if that's like a myth or if that's...
How long does your sessions have to be able to picture 200 different individuals?
Well, not at once, but just that he would always be thinking about somebody else or a different... Maybe he's only thinking of 10. You know, 10 of the 200, but he's never thinking about his wife is the point. And so I heard that when I was in junior high, and that freaked me out. And I was like, okay, never have sex, because then I'll never forget, you know, never forget.
I don't think it works that way. Like, you can mentally image or imagine whoever you want, whether you've had sex with them or not. Like, it's not like a thing where it's just like you can only picture the people you've had sex with. That has nothing to do with what you're picturing while you're with your current partner. And so it's just that's so gross to tell teenagers that. Like,
well, can we move out of Kennewick and into a different school?
Please. Yes.
It is in, I believe, within the obtuse triangle. And this is actually a cool one. We're going back to billboards. We're going back to billboards for this one, but also about protecting children. The Satanic Temple has erected a billboard in Springtown, Texas, inviting students to never be hit in school again by exercising their religious rights. The school district near Fort Worth uses paddling as a disciplinary measure in accordance with state law permitting corporal punishment. One of the tenets of Satanic Temple is to affirm the inviolability of the human body. The billboard points students to register on Protect the Children Project website, where they can affirm bodily autonomy as one of their deeply held religious beliefs. Temple spokesman Lucian Greaves promised that the temple will send cease and desist letters on behalf of any registered student facing corporal punishment. What do you guys think of this?
Yay, Satanists!
Yes, well played. I love the idea and the strategy of saying, you know, this idea is important to me. It's a religious idea, in fact, that I sincerely hold. And since your state is all about affirming sincerely held religious beliefs and freedom, support this one too. I don't want to be hurt. I believe in the inviolability of my body.
This one in particular, the school district. Were you guys aware of an incident that happened in 2012 in the school district with paddling?
No, I don't think so.
So this was a district that does incorporate as one of the discipline punishments, one of the punishments or consequences that that students can choose. They can choose either, you know, paddling, or they can choose a, you know, Saturday detention or things like that. But they had a law or a rule within their district saying that only female administrators can paddle female students and male administrators cannot paddle female students. Well, in one of the high schools, there were two young women that were paddled as a consequence for a disciplinary infraction by their male administrator. And the school board, instead of censuring or punishing or firing or filing charges against this particular principal, decided to pass a retroactive rule saying, no, any administrator can paddle whomever.
Oh, my goodness. Like, they go back to why you wrote that rule in the first place and reevaluate, because, oh, my God, that's oogie. That's one of those things that, like, when I was in school, I had a particular teacher that was eventually arrested for misconduct with a student. And I had complained about him regularly during my sophomore year. And it wasn't until like 10 years after I graduated that he was dealt with. So what is happening in this school district where they're like, oh, no, that was actually fine, even though you broke the rules like that were set at that time. Like, what is that? What sort of precedent is that setting for the future of their school rules? I mean, what happens if an administrator decides that a paddling isn't severe enough? What if they want to, like, I don't know what else they would do. But I mean, because that's pretty severe, like, for a child.
Like, paddle them twice as hard and then change the rules afterwards to be like, that's okay, too.
Right.
Like, why is, I guess maybe I'm just not as familiar with the culture, but why are they using paddling, you know? Why are they hitting kids to teach them a lesson?
Well, there's actually still somewhere between 15 and 19 states in our union that do still permit corporal punishment as part of public school disciplinary procedures. Now, in some of those states, there will be individual school boards that will make it illegal within their school system to do it, or counties that will have a law that said none of the schools within our county will employ corporal punishment. But it's on the books in somewhere between 15 and 19, and that number's a little bit funny depending on how you want to, like, interpret some of their laws. In some places, paddling is prohibited, but solitary detention and restraint is permitted as a disciplinary punishment. And in Washington state, we have, as part of our revised code of Washington, as our state laws, we are not permitted to have any kind of corporal punishment within our states. But we are permitted to have restraint if it is a matter of safety for the student or other people, you know, being hurt or injured by this student. So you do have cases of you know, 6-year-olds being handcuffed and used in restraint, which can actually injure the child who's been handcuffed.
Right.
Because if they're cuffed and they have a temper tantrum, you know, they've got a fit, they can injure mm-hmm. themselves because of the way in which they've been restrained.
Right. Well, when I was working as an educator, working with special needs, including our emotional behavioral students, we, in order for us to be in those classrooms with them, we had to go through this fairly comprehensive response training in how to hold a student properly, how to restrain, the various restraints to use. And I mean, they're not easy to do, but in order to be in those classrooms, we had to be able to show competence in those strategies. And so I don't think, like, a six-year-old necessarily should be handcuffed, because there are much better, safer ways to do that. But yeah, if we were found to have, you know, put hands on a student or restrained a student in any way without having that training, that was almost immediate grounds for termination, because you put a child at risk. So for me, from that perspective, in having this training, I cannot foresee a situation in which I would have to injure a child to get them to stop doing something. I mean, I've been in situations where I've had to restrain a student. It's not fun. It's not easy. But I'll tell you, my student did not walk away with any injuries. I certainly did, but not my student.
So in terms of the inviolability of human, of your bodily, you know, rights, I'm interested to see how this goes and where it goes. I'm interested to see if in other states that have something like a RFRA law, a Religious Freedom Restoration Act, where you're deeply held or sincerely held religious beliefs.
Those magical words, yeah. Sincere and deeply held. They can't just be can't halfway.
No.
They got to be sincere.
Got to be sincere.
Yeah. I mean, it didn't seem to have succeeded in Missouri for the abortion waiting period. And we'll see how it goes and whether it's upheld in terms of students electing or not electing to be paddled. It's an interesting approach, and I'm wondering what other circumstances one could look at to try and overturn unjust laws or damaging rules or damaging consequences by relying or employing the tenet of the Satanic Temple.
Right.
The inviolability of your bodily autonomy.
I think we're going to see a lot more of their actions in the coming years with the sort of restrictions that are being placed on people right now. They're only going to get worse in the next 4 years. So what are we? I'm really excited to see what we're going to see from the Satanic Temple. Of course, they never fail to to amuse and like they're actually not just amusing, but they're inspiring in the way that they are able to rework laws or rephrase or sort of put a different perspective on them. It's always fascinating.
Well, when we come back, we're going to go from Texas to North Dakota to hear some kind of funny rulings that happened and some funny rants about such people as us heathens. Maybe not Satanists, but humanists. This is Ask an Atheist, 844 Skeptic, and we'll be back in a moment.
I'm Mike Gillis.
And I'm Casey Dorn.
And we want to ask you an important question. Are you sick and tired of other panel discussion shows wasting your time droning on and on about foreign policy, economics, and human rights?
Or do you want to hear conversations about things that actually matter?
We host a podcast called Radio Versus the Martians. Every month we gather a panel of our nation's finest minds and plunge a rusty prison shank into the heart of tough questions that have an impact on the lives of real people like you.
Like, are drivers required to pull over for the Ghostbusters?
Is the United Federation of Planets actually an oppressive dictatorship run by guidance counselors?
Is Arnold Schwarzenegger secretly a genius?
And are we being mean when we laugh at movies that are so bad they're good?
So write your congressman and let them know that Radio Versus the Martians is available on iTunes, Stitcher, and on RadioVersusTheMartians.com.
Allegedly, soccer is a beautiful game.
It is when you know what's going on.
That's the problem. MLS is 20 years old, and people are still shocked to hear that there's an American Soccer League.
That's why you and I are talking about it. This is a discussion of American soccer for nerds and beginners. It's a good first step if a crippling soccer addiction is something that's missing from your life.
Join the club. Celebrate the 20th anniversary of MLS by actually following the season.
Hands-free football. New episodes every week at handsfreefootball.com.
I want to bring it back, but it's more than basic.
My name is Jonathan Ariola of TDTF Pod. The more voices you hear, the more we observe and feel, the more we learn about the other facets of this complex and wondrous beast that is humanism and free thought. Join me on the science-loving journey through topics like justice, murder, family, diligence, taste, history, society, race, boob jobs, law, addiction, video games, fear, sacrifice, children. Wait, not sacrificing children. That's not what I meant. Bring the popcorn and watch me break down. The issue's too deep, too fast. Join me at TDTF Pod. I'm Jonathan Ariola. Talk to you soon.
Welcome back to Ask an Atheist. We've got a story from the Dakotas, and it's a little bit funny, I guess, is the best way that I could reframe it. But anyway, it's a bill that would allow businesses to open earlier on Sundays. It narrowly failed in the North Dakota Senate. According to state law, businesses cannot be open between 12 a.m. and noon on Sunday. However, many types of businesses are excluded from the rule, including hospitals, restaurants, and others. Senator Dick Dever from Bismarck said that this bill represented an attack by humanists to force their religion onto the public sphere. Supporters of the bill said that businesses should be free to decide whether to be open or closed on Sunday morning.
I don't understand why they would have a law stating what time businesses can be open, because I mean, it looks like there's quite a few exceptions to those rule to that law anyways. So what's the point in holding to that? Like,
yeah, I found it fascinating that restaurants would be excluded, because I kind of understand why you would exclude hospitals.
Yes.
Kind of an essential, important, you know, Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath sort of thing. But restaurants.
Restaurants are because that before church group, you have to go out for breakfast, you know, or you have your breakfast Bible studies or whatever before church, or after church, you go out to brunch or whatever. So you have to have those open for those crowds.
I love the actual statements that he was saying against humanists and atheists. This rant was hilarious. One of them was, when an atheist goes to court to take God out of the pledge, to take God out of the classroom, to take God out of the Boy Scouts, they are using the government as a tool to advance their faith. So yeah. Guys, did you know that we are the faithful? We are the faithful atheists, apparently.
And he said our Bible is the Humanist Manifesto.
He actually said Humanist Manifestos 1, 2, and 3 is our Bibles. So, you know, just like how there's contradictions in the Gospels and contradictions between, like, Numbers and Leviticus, there's contradictions in our Bibles, you know, between
sure.
Humanist Manifesto 1
but we
and
don't,
the most recent one.
I mean, but we don't have a God helping us writing it, so you would expect contradictions. That's my
spoiler! Neither did the Hebrews!
But wait a minute. If we're working off of the Humanist Manifesto 3 right now, does that mean we're in the Book of Mormon?
Yeah.
In the Humanist Book of Mormon?
Old Testament, New Testament.
Is that what that means? Is that what he thinks it is? Because
it is an American, you know, document.
Oh, that's a good point, Becky. Thank you.
Yes. I do recommend checking it out. It's on the Dickinson Press .com. Or you can just do a Google search for...
Are we talking about humanism and its principles?
No, his actual rant, if you want to hear
his...
Oh, we'll put it in the show notes. Let's not give his rant any more airtime at this point.
When I was watching it, I kind of understood what he was doing, though. He was framing... he read an article, part of an article from, I think, 1983, from The Humanist about... It was a guy who wrote that humanists basically need to... take over classrooms and present humanist values and will teach people to love their neighbor like Christianity never could when you read that article. So I get if he's reacting to that one guy's opinion and saying, okay, now that's everybody.
Well, maybe in the face of when still within the early 80s and still going on today, you have Christianity being taught in public schools.
Well, exactly.
So maybe to provide the alternate, you know, viewpoints that are there to disestablish Christianity from our public schools, perhaps in that circumstance, in that context, yes, but not exclusively.
Right. And what is the problem with teaching humanist qualities? I mean, you can have like Jewish people who are humanists. You can have Christian humanists. You can have like, it doesn't necessarily mean a secular humanist. Those qualities can be translated between religions too. So there's nothing stating that a humanist teaching is going to detract from any religious teachings either. Like they are not exclusive statements.
I will say this. If you want to get into the head of Betsy DeVos and you know, any number of people.
You said her name.
I know, sorry.
Ugh.
Okay, take a
are we talking
acid.
are we talking like physically, like, you know.
No.
That would be a great idea.
No, that's horrible. No.
Ask an Atheist does not promote
does
nor
not
endorse
no.
The ice picking of Betsy DeVos's head.
See it. See, look
Except
how quickly
we sort of do.
Looks how quickly your humanism breaks down with someone you disagree. Okay, so his just I would say watch the video if you want to understand. So their perspective is that there's like this humanist agenda to take over society, and so these blue laws are part of it. That's why he's ranting about schools. Like, I was watching it wondering, why is he talking about schools?
The blue laws would be the defense of it, because the blue laws stem from that Puritan time when no work could be done on the Sabbath at all.
Right.
Forget that the Sabbath was the Saturday within Puritan laws, and Sunday was the Lord's Day. And it's all backwards and wonky.
Yeah. Well, and the whole concept, I think really what he's doing in that rant is actually sort of the psychological aspect of projecting. They're doing a certain thing, but they're blaming somebody else for doing that thing, even though that other person isn't doing that thing. You know what I mean?
It's a way to justify doing those things themselves, because they're like, well, we're balancing out this other attack.
And it's not even the humanists are attacking anything. It's that they are defending against what these people are already doing and accusing the humanists of doing. Do you see what I mean?
Yeah,
Like, they have taken over all of these schools and they're doing all of this creationist teaching and Christian teaching in public schools. And now they're saying, you know, or whatever this is about. And now they're saying, oh, but it's the humanists that are trying to do this, when they're already doing this as the Christian right. And so they're projecting their behaviors onto the humanists.
Besides that, he's projecting the extent to this law. All it is about whether you can have your gym open on Sunday morning at 9 a.m., you know, versus waiting until noon. All it is waiting to see whether your hardware store can open on Sunday morning for someone that wants to, you know, plant their trees on a Sunday afternoon, right? And he said, this is all about humanists taking God out of school, the Boy Scouts and this and that. And the this is just any business owner wanting to be able to open their establishment.
There was someone who gave a secular reason for it, and I don't remember who it was, but
for keeping the blue laws?
Yeah, and what she was saying was that this creates a common time that you know everyone's not working, and you can use it for family, you can use it for church if you want to. You don't have to, because a lot of people go to church on different days, or don't go to church, go to other things.
You know what would be really fun to do with my family?
Mm-hmm.
Go pick out a whole bunch of landscaping stuff at the Home Depot so that I can now beautify my yard. Or, you know what also would be really fun, like with someone that I'm dating, you know, maybe go to the gym and do a spin class at 9 a.m.
Or
That's some really good quality bonding community time.
What happens to those businesses that are open 24 hours, like the 24-hour fitness or whatever, just as an example? Like, do they have to close for those 12 hours and so they can't be considered a 24-hour business?
Well, they're not
business?
A hospital and they're not a restaurant.
So. Yeah. So, I mean, how harmful is that to that business, is that we're open 24 hours except for this 12 hours every week? And
to that point, a lot of people who want to shop during that time will just go to the nearest town that's open. So it's
well, but isn't this a state thing?
It's the entire state.
The entire state. So unless you're on the border, you're out of luck, you know?
Well, going from hating on humanists to loving on humanists, we actually have a really wonderful email. And this is from Lee from Virginia. It's a little bit long, so bear with me. But Lee from Virginia wrote to us about the Muslim ban at the airports, the protests in face of the Muslim ban. And she said that, I'm glad that we talked about the atheist response to the Muslim ban. Lee writes, I live near the Dulles International Airport, and when I saw the news about the ban and its cruel and tumultuous counterproductive implementation, I got more and more upset. I went on Reddit r/atheism, and there was some awful opinions about the morality of this ban. Many people said that this would stop terrorists from coming in. Even people who were against the ban strongly felt that atheists should not publicly take a side. I obviously disagreed. The fact is that these refugees are people escaping Muslim terrorism, and I felt that they should be supported, even though I had no real idea at that moment of anything I could do. As background information, I have interacted with many, many Muslims over the years. My experience with American Muslims is that they have a very progressive attitude toward other people's rights. even if they are strong believers themselves, which many are not. And here's my recent experience to support that. As I kept watching the news that day, I kept getting more and more upset and feeling powerless. I finally got so upset that I decided to go to Dulles. I quickly made a sign. It said, "Atheists support Muslim immigrants. Welcome!" And went over to the airport, thinking that there might be a handful of other protesters that I could stand with. I was pretty nervous about being there alone with an atheist sign that I almost turned around a couple times. But now, what a great feeling. Wow, what a great feeling when I got there and saw that there were at least 200 or 300 protesters, maybe more. I got emotional to see that there were so many good people who do not hate others. It was such a friendly and welcoming crowd. Everyone was talking to each other. Free delicious halal food and drinks showed up, and everyone was so united. Surprisingly to me, I constantly kept getting people of Muslim background coming over to me because of my sign. At least 24, probably more, who said my sign was their favorite. They wanted pictures with me and my sign, and hugs, and to talk for a minute. Many leaned into me and said softly that they secretly don't believe either. This is evidence that there are a lot of non-believing nominal Muslims. They want to be in the U.S. where they have freedoms. Also surprising to me, several Christians wanted to take pictures with me, and their Christians support Muslims signs. I had at least 6 or 7 interesting, respectful conversations with Christians who had never knowingly interacted with an atheist before. Several of them were obviously uncomfortable or nervous, but made the point to stretch themselves to talk to me. All the conversations went well, and the Christians said how happy they were to have met me. And I met other atheists. Several made it a point to come over and to thank me for my sign. Mostly, I got a lot of thumbs up from people who made a point to catch my eye. Reporters and bloggers also interviewed me or wanted pics. You have to understand that it was jam-packed in there, but people kept pushing through the crowd to come over to me because of that atheist support Muslim immigrant sign. I know many people feel that they cannot be vocal or public about their atheism, but that sign with its positive message and maybe my friendly smile earned so much goodwill for our community that I will definitely be more out about my atheism in the future. And I want to encourage others to be as well. Thank you for all that you do, and I encourage you to continue to use your platform to fight against the anti-science, anti-reality, and pro-cruelty actions of our current political leadership.
Oh, wow, Lee, thank you so much for writing in. You got me a little emotional, actually.
Those are real tears that you're hearing. So have you guys been to rallies and protests where you've identified yourself as an atheist, either through your signage or your clothing or anything like that?
Absolutely. Yeah. I'm not one to be quiet about my atheism by any stretch of the imagination. And it's scary at times. Like you, the first time I did publicly out myself as an atheist in a non-atheist environment, it was terrifying and I wanted to go home at first, and experienced a very similar experience to you. We tend to get sort of looked down upon for our lack of belief, and powering through that and really making those connections is not only a good thing for you, but all of those people that you encountered. You made a difference in their lives. So thank you for being brave.
What about you, Sean?
I haven't worn a shirt or held a sign that identified myself as an atheist or anything like that. And part of that, I think, is I'm still kind of exploring my identity. I feel like the word atheist so much draws a lot of attention to God in a way, because most of the word is theism. And I don't want to, you know, send the message out there that I think people should be defined by belief or not belief in God over, say, karma or reincarnation. Like, I could just as easily be a non-reincarnationist.
Does Lee's email give you any pause to that, to hear her experience that so many people of differing faiths were so positive in reacting to her presence and her sign?
Well, in a situation where it's about religion, I mean, then let's face it, the the travel ban has a lot to do with religion. I think in that situation, I might be more likely to identify myself. But I also noticed that a lot of people, like Lee mentions in the email, that a lot of people who approached, I'm sorry, I don't know if it's him or her.
Her,
okay. A lot of the people who approached her felt a little bit uncomfortable at first, and they had to overcome that. And I feel like if I identify myself as an atheist, it's like harder for other people to overcome that hurdle, when it's like, I'd rather they get to know me, because to me, not believing in God is as big a deal as not believing in reincarnation, for instance. And I don't need to have, it's not something I want to meditate on. I don't know what I would call myself. Like, I'm non-religious, or, you know, I'm none of the above, and we support Muslims coming to America. Like, I'm not sure what my sign would say if I needed to pick something, like rationalist, free thinker. Like, I don't know what label I like the best, because they all have something a little bit unique about them. But in a scenario where it's a bunch of, you know, religions coming together. I mean, one thing I really liked seeing was there were a couple local pastors that showed up in their clerical collars who got pepper sprayed. I didn't like that they got pepper sprayed, but my point is they showed up saying, we are this religion and we support this or that. So, you know, I'm not exactly sure what would prompt me to want to identify myself and my beliefs, and how I would identify it.
I think the thing that brings it to me, to the determining factor of whether I want to identify through my clothing or through my signage that I am an atheist or a secular humanist at a particular rally that maybe doesn't have to do directly with religion or separation of church and state, is if there's other people of other faiths that are there and coming together in unity to say, hey, people of no faith, people who are none of the above, also feel this way, united with you. So I was sure to wear my atheist t-shirt at the rally in Tollefson Plaza in Tacoma, right after the Orlando nightclub shooting. Because I know that there are people of faith that are speakers that are there, and it's about people coming together in a community. And to show that atheists are part of a community that are united in this particular belief, about justice, or about the injustice of something, or about, you know, putting an end to violence or putting an end to discrimination, despite not being united in whether we believe in God or not. And that's really the deciding factor for me. So I don't know whether in the March for Science, which is one of those things that doesn't have anything to do with religion, or perhaps an upcoming Black Lives Matter march, or perhaps an upcoming, financial and economic justice march, we might see some more people being brave and being able to wear their atheism on their sleeve. But I think that that's all the time that we have today. I want to thank Lee for your really touching email. I want to thank Bridget. Thank you for being here today. And for Sean for sharing so much of your personal views on the things that we talked about today. Our music is by Chris Coleman and Phil Whitfield. I'm today's producer, Becky Friedman. You can tweet us at AskAnAtheistWA. Email us at questions@askanatheist.tv. Leave us a voicemail at 844-SKEPTIC. That's 844-753-7842. And call your legislators. Raise a ruckus for all the things that are important and that you care about. See you guys next week.